enough doses. Non-aspirin NSAIDs disrupt the S phase of cell division, the point when the cell manufactures new DNA, replicating its genetic material. This is the phase of cell division that is the most receptive to conventional chemotherapy drugs and is the phase when cancer cells are most resistant to radiotherapy. It would make sense, then, to sensitize these resistant cells by combining the treatments together. But this is not current clinical practice. Despite studies showing irradiation with concurrent high-dose NSAID was not associated with an increased level of side effects. The real debate comes down to use of these compounds in two settings: cancer prevention, which involves long-term use of a drug, and cancer treatment, involving short-term, focused use of the drug, said Douglas Trask, MD, PhD, University of Iowa Associate Professor of Otolaryngology, in an online report from Science Daily. Published studies show that heart and kidney problems occur with long-term use, especially when used for more than 1 year. While there appear to be cardiorenal effects of NSAIDs, even with short-term use, these risks may be minor compared to the potential benefit to treat cancer more effectively. Concurrent use of a statin and dipyridamole would also help mitigate any cardio effects and enhance efficacy. If these and intravenous vitamin C, berberine, mebendazole, a non-aspirin NSAID, used short-term or pulsed, were used in a cocktail alongside chemotherapy, could the maximum tolerated dose be dramatically lowered? Chemotherapy is useful, there is no doubting that, but the maximum tolerated dose is far too much, particularly for the stage 4 patient when the toxicity and level of immune suppression often kills the patient faster than if they had no chemo at all. My insistence on a lower dose, whilst I also took the berberine and other cancer-starving drugs, dropped my markers into normal range very quickly, but it required a full Oscar-winning performance to get it. At low dose, given judiciously, chemotherapy can be immune-stimulating, a fact that many natural and alternative therapy protagonists will deny. It is a knee-jerk reaction to cut it out completely because of its reported inefficacy for stage 4 patients. But do not automatically rule it out if your oncologist is willing to give you a low dose. With the current standard of care, only around 50% to 60% of patients will survive longer than 5 years, far less 10 years. And these statistics have remained the same for decades. And for many patients, the thought of a long battle or war, armed with the barbaric weaponry currently on offer, is just too great. Many start flying the white flag and accede defeat with little resistance almost from the start. Using the word war or battle is tantamount to literary suicide for a cancer book nowadays. Counselors are told never to use these words or other bellicose phrases when talking to cancer patients. These words are quite rightly being shunned by cancer patients as they try and grasp the enormity of what faces them. Many books now focus on making peace and learning from your cancer. Sure, do that if you think it is going to help, but that alone is not going to get you well. So I am going to buck the trend. Yes, you need to wage a war, but of a different kind. Be smart, be sneaky, outwit it. I don't believe you have to suffer to slay it. Looking back at history, we have much to learn from the ancient Greeks and how they played out a great many of their wars. It was a very simple, very effective technique, and casualties were few. If we were to employ a similar approach, our bodies would be spared the hugely toxic high doses of chemotherapy, and this dreadfully damaging treatment would be consigned to the dustbin of history where it belongs. Making peace with your cancer, whilst you slay it, would be an easier thing to achieve as a result. Did I ever make peace with my cancer? Did I learn lessons or feel it was a gift? I guess I'm not afraid of it, if that is making peace. I learnt to live with it. I have learnt a lot about the human body, especially mine, and the various aspects of the disease. But making friends with it, being thankful for it, no, never. Cancer was always the enemy. But how you choose to approach your disease is entirely up to you. Leaving the psychologically terrifying aspect of the disease aside for a moment, on a cellular level, it is indeed one of battle, however you choose to think about it in your head. Whilst you make peace with it, understand there is a very real power struggle taking place, a turf war between your healthy cells and cancer cells. Not just for territory, but for nutrients. Cancer behaves like a parasite, taking up your body's supplies, your immunity, and gradually growing until it encroaches on your own life systems. As frightening as this sounds, there is, I believe, an easy and far less damaging approach to defeating it. To illustrate my approach, let me take you back to a city called Plataea, located south of the city of Thebes in a Spartan-controlled region called Boeotia, located in ancient Greece in 431 BC. Plataea was a well-defended small city that somehow managed to survive being overthrown by Spartan-led forces and was one of the last strongholds in southern Boeotia that still swore allegiance to Athens. Unfortunately, its location made it incredibly vulnerable. Knowing that they would be attacked, the Plataeans had built up incredibly strong defences. Despite being vulnerable, the citizens of Plataea felt sure that in times of trouble they could rely on their old ally Athens to come to their rescue. The citizens of the nearby city of Thebes were under the control of Sparta. They were getting fed up with this neighbourly Athenian-controlled nuisance and decided they had had enough, knowing it was fiercely defended with very strong high walls, lots of weaponry, and many fit young soldiers. They hatched a plan to take it in a different way. The idea was to use stealth and cunning, and by doing so, hopefully use less force, and so less bloodshed. The Thebans had heard that there were some Plataean citizens in the city who, knowing their vulnerable position, felt very unsafe. They knew an attack would come from Thebes sooner or later. A few of the inhabitants of Plataea decided they would rather surrender and live to fight another day without the risk of a war. The Thebans persuaded one of these nervous citizens to become a traitor and help them carry out their dastardly plan. One night, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, the traitor opened one of the gates of Plataea to an advance party of about 300 soldiers from the Theban army. They met no resistance, and they marched straight into the market square of Plataea, taking the city by surprise. The plan was that this small troop would occupy the city until the larger, attacking force arrived later during that morning. This nearly worked, like the Trojan horse. The Plataeans were so shocked by this unexpected invasion that they immediately surrendered. During the night, however, it became clear to the Plataeans that the Theban army was only small, so the men, women, and even the slaves gathered together and mounted a full fight back in the middle of the night. Some Thebans escaped, some were killed, but the Plataeans took 180 of the invading army hostage and regained control of their city. When the large attacking force of Thebans arrived, as per the original plan, they were upset that their original plan had been foiled and wanted the immediate release of the hostages. They promised to retreat in return for their safe release, to which the Plataeans agreed. But as soon as the Theban army left, the Plataeans went against their word and executed every single one of the hostages. This, of course, did not go down well. The Thebans were beyond furious. Outraged, they launched a full-scale attack on the city with siege engines and battering rams. the Plataeans were fully expecting this reaction and were well prepared, so they fought them off, each attack being effectively rebutted. For 2 years, the Thebans fought on their own in vain to take the city. After all this time, with no sign of success, yet unwilling to give up, the Spartans arrived on the scene to help their Theban allies, part of the Confederate. The Spartans suggested another approach. First, they built another wall around the city to protect themselves from any Athenian armies that might arrive to rescue the Plataeans. Next, they built a giant mound of earth outside the city wall, from which they planned to mount an attack by climbing and entering over the top of the wall. But the higher they built the mound, the higher the Plataeans inside the city built the defending wall. The Plataeans laughed at their pathetic attempt. This made the Thebans and Spartans even more enraged. Next, the Thebans and Spartans brought in their big battering rams, but these were rendered useless by the Plataeans, who used large beams on chains, swung from the walls that were so effective that they smashed the rams. Again, the Plataeans jeered and shouted insults at the attackers from the ramparts of the city wall. Seething with rage and undeterred, the Thebans then tried to burn and smoke them out. They waited until the wind was in the right direction, then took huge bales of hay up to the top of the mound they had built earlier and hurled them over. The Plataeans saw what they were up to and were ready with buckets of water and beaters to put out the flames. A large part of the city was destroyed, but still the Plataeans would not surrender. The Plataeans seemed able to outwit their every move. The Thebans and Spartans were now weary. They had used up all their best weapons and had got nowhere. But they were still furious at the slaughter of the hostages. They were determined to beat the Plataeans somehow. They would not give up. With no effective weapons left at their disposal, the decision was taken to sit it out and wait, to starve them into submission. The plan was to keep them captive. No food would be allowed to enter, and no one was to escape the city. This was a strategy that required much patience. But the Theban troops camped outside the city walls for a further 2 years and just remained there in readiness to pick off anyone attempting to flee. Eventually, in 427 BC, 4 years after the start of this battle, the Plataeans, weak, hungry, and reduced in number, eventually decided to surrender on the promise they were given a fair trial. The Spartans agreed. Were they shown any mercy as promised, or a fair trial, after they had brutally slaughtered the Theban hostages? Certainly not. In a mock trial, they were asked a single question by 5 Spartan judges. Have you done anything to help the Spartans and their allies in the present war? As each soldier could only answer no, inevitably they were led away to their execution. Horrified, the surviving women looked on as their menfolk were murdered, before they themselves were taken away and sold into slavery. The city of Plataea, once so strong and indestructible, was razed to the ground. Lessons. 1. Weaken the enemy. Attacking an enemy when they are in a position of strength is a waste of resources and effort. You risk losing troops and allies in the fight, and there will be lots of collateral damage. With the most difficult, seemingly invincible foe, one who is quickly adaptable, it is easiest to kill him when he is weak and defenseless. 2. Starve the enemy. It is a simple and effective tactic still used by warring factions today. A cancer cell needs constant sources of energy, predominantly glucose, and access to proteins and fat, to keep on making more copies of itself. Think of it like building a new house.